Napa know-how.
Napa guy knows not to judge a man by his car's multicolored paint job or absence of modern gadgetry. Who cares if it's technically old enough to vote and the windows are powered by the strength of your left arm? Your monthly payment is zero, and it'll stay that way. Because with over 500,000 parts and a little Napa know-how, you can keep anything on the road. She may not be pretty, but she's all yours. That's Napa know-how.
Napa know-how.
Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Friends Accountant Radio Show. The Friends Accountant Radio Show helps promote businesses, nonprofits, and artists. If you would like to be a guest in the show, please send me an email to kevin@friendsofkevin.com. To learn more about the Friends of Kevin Networking Group, you can visit our website at Friends of Kevin. So, got my buddy Jack Wayne from Longhorn Financial with us today. Before we start, as always, please remember, Jack's on the show for informational purposes. This should not be construed as financial advice. As always, seek a qualified financial advisor before making any decisions. Good afternoon, Jack. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Kevin. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, I appreciate you coming. So, Jack, let's jump in. Coming into the holiday season, things get a little more complicated with extended families. What are some of the things they should consider regarding their finances, my friend?
Yeah, holiday season is, you know, can be stressful enough, and I totally understand that. You know, you might be meeting new relatives for the first time, you know, relatives through marriage or whatever, or, you know, having the new grandkids, you know, first Christmas, of course, whatever you celebrate. But one thing that people should consider are some stuff around estate planning, specifically around beneficiary planning, things like, you know, who's the beneficiary on life insurance policies, who's the beneficiary on pay or retirement accounts, things like that, just because it can be so complicated.
Jack, one of the things I find is people don't even consider to renew their beneficiaries. As you mentioned, you know, maybe we're on to a second marriage or our first marriage ended. You know, shouldn't people take time every year to consider that just in case something's changed?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, it's one of those things that you don't really think about. Like you said, you know, but perhaps people got married, got divorced, and then married again, had a birth, had a death, whatever. And it's one of those things that easily gets put off because you're busy day to day with whatever else you're doing, right? So,
of course.
But yet, at the end, God forbid something happens, it can have a major, major impact and a lot of pain that you can easily avoid now.
Now, Jack, are there any basic rules people should consider with this? You know, I know I've seen it, you know, with my wife and myself when we sat down to talk about, you know, God forbid we died simultaneously or one then the other right away. How just, you know, a couple seconds of life can change your beneficiaries tremendously. Can we talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. Some of the real basic rules. So everybody thinks, you know, sort of this misconception that when you pass away, everything goes into your estate and it just automatically goes to your spouse or automatically goes to whatever. And that's not always the case. So a couple things. So things like life insurance and 401k and retirement accounts, because you designate a beneficiary on those, or you certainly should anyway, those operate by contract. And so what that means is, for example, life insurance, if you pass away, then the protection proceeds get paid to whoever you name as the beneficiary. It doesn't go through probate. It doesn't get offset by, you know, debt that you might owe otherwise, what have you. You know, life insurance company cuts the check to your beneficiary, end of story. Same thing with 401k, same thing in IRAs for the most part. However, just about everything else operates through probate. And what that basically means is, and probate really is a term that means to prove. And so what that means is you pass away and that doesn't have a designated beneficiary. It goes into probate. And so the court, part of the court's job is to sort of prove that you own it and prove that there are or are not creditors and things like that. And so the probate process can take a while. It's public, so people can, you know, nose around in your business. And not only that, but whatever value of the assets that go into probate before your beneficiaries get that money, the state has to settle up all your debts. So if you passed $100,000 in assets into probate and you had $99,000 in debt, then your beneficiary is only splitting $1,000, right? Versus if you had a $100,000 life insurance policy, your beneficiaries get $100,000, you know, or whatever split or numbers you use, but that's just a basic example. But there's also rules around things like designating what's called contingent beneficiaries. So, you know, like you mentioned, you know, God forbid you and Cheryl pass away simultaneously, or me and my wife pass away simultaneously. If there's no contingent beneficiary name, meaning in case we're not around, then that money or that contract or that whatever does go into the estate. So, you know, assuming that you know or have someone in mind, you should always designate a contingent beneficiary. Having said that, it's common, you know, hey, you know, parents will designate each other and then the kids as the contingent beneficiary. Well, again, if the kids are under 18, though, in that instance, it can be kind of problematic. So there's a lot more paperwork that has to go in when you're passing assets to a minor, not the least of which sometimes parents have to prove that they're actually the parent of said child. It's a little odd, but it's true. Things like that. It just adds another layer of complexity that you really kind of don't need.
So, Jack, and also something very important I've seen happen a few months ago, make sure everything's in writing. You know, it just had a situation where, you know, everyone knew what mom and dad wanted. Then mom and dad passed, and everything changed. Everyone wanted their share, if you will. So it's very important to make sure, even if it's everyone knows what's expected, we get it in writing, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Have it in writing. If you end up using a will or creating a will, which is highly recommended for everyone, not only do you want to get in writing, but you also want to make sure that there's only one copy. Because where fights tend to arise is, you do a will today, and then 6 months from now, you amend it so you change the beneficiaries around a little bit or whatever, but you don't destroy the first copy or the first version. Then both part, you know, a person who has each version can sort of go into court and sort of argue, well, you really meant this and not this other thing. And even though, you know, version two came after version one, what it really meant was version one. And so definitely have it in writing, destroy the prior versions. And actually, you know, there's a news story about this right now. And I haven't really followed it, but apparently somewhere there's a gentleman in a hospital, I guess, on life support, and he has tattooed on his body, do not resuscitate, and doctors and his family are trying to figure out what to do, because tattoos on a body, while written, isn't exactly a legally binding document. So I'm not sure what's happening in that case, but I do see the headlines that people are really kind of, you know, the parties involved are really kind of fighting over this, because, you know, does it really represent his legal wishes, or did he get the tattoo as a joke or something? You know, who knows, right?
Right.
It's on his body,
it's not on
a piece of paper.
So, Jack, can you talk a little about the rules around per capita and per stripes for people?
Yeah. The rules around per capita, per stripes is basically how, when you have multiple beneficiaries, how the money is split. So per capita means by the head. So let's say you have two kids and you leave all your money to them. If one kid passes away before you and you don't change your beneficiaries, then the surviving kid gets 100% of the money instead of originally having it split 50-50. For stirpus is so-called by the branch. So again, in the same example, you have two kids. One predeceases you. You know, you pass away. Well, the surviving kid still only gets 50%, but the other 50% goes to that deceased kid's beneficiary. So it could be a spouse, could be their kid, you know, which in turn be like your grandkids, whatever, things like that. So it's not uncommon to see designations one way or the other, because people will try to either intentionally disinherit like a son-in-law or daughter-in-law, or they will go another way to make sure that their grandkids are taken care of. But it is an important distinction that people don't often think about.
Now, like you said, I've seen that many times. So now, Jack, when we're having this discussion, often people hear this and like, oh, that's just for people with money, quote unquote. Not necessarily true, correct?
Correct. You know, people think about it as a money issue. It's really not. I can tell you that of all the people I've dealt with, no one has said, I like to leave my kids millions of dollars. But what is always said is, I don't want to leave my kids with a bill. So this isn't just about leaving money. It's also sort of assets and who's going to handle what and things like that. So it's all clear. And so you don't end up having a fight about it after, let's say, mom and dad passes away.
Now, Jack, the other thing people forget about is something as simple, not as simple, but their houses, their cars. How's that handled if there's no instructions?
Yeah, those are typically probate assets, unless those are jointly owned. So, for example, if you own your house together with your spouse in what's called a joint tenant, then when you pass away, the house goes to your spouse or the other owner, right? It could be, you know, brother or sister, whatever. Same thing with cars. But if they're not jointly owned, then it would go through the probate process, unfortunately, which can take time and money.
Now, like I said, it definitely becomes interesting when that happens. So what are some of the other examples, you know, quote unquote, regular people get into trouble with?
Yeah, you know, I'll use an example like a house. And I've seen this many times where, let's say, mom and dad would like to leave the house to the kids. You know, it's the house that the kids grew up in. The kids are grown. They have their own home. So mom and dad pass away. The house gets left to the kids, you know, per the will. But, you know, what do the kids do, right? They have their own homes, but, you know, just because they pass them, the mortgage might still need to be paid or property taxes. So what if the kids can't afford their own mortgage plus their share of mom and dad's house, mortgage payment? You know, so things like that, like in principle, it sounds very, very easy, right? Oh, I want to leave the house to the kids. Great, simple. In practice, it can really be a problem. And next thing you know, your kids are under hardship because they can't carry two mortgage payments and they're stuck with an extra house. What are they going to do? See that pretty often. And so you got to, you know, with a little planning, you can avoid that pretty easily. But I do see it quite a bit.
Absolutely. Now, Jack, what happens to someone's debt when they pass away? Is it just forgiven?
Yeah, pretty much when the debt, when someone passes away, it becomes an obligation of the estate. And if the deceased was the only borrower, meaning there was no co-borrowers or anything like that, then whatever money is in the estate is used to settle up the debt. I had mentioned an example before. If it's a co-borrower, right, then the other party who's a co-borrower would be responsible for that debt. But generally speaking, I hear this a lot about, oh, you know, mom and dad owed a ton of money in credit cards. If they pass away, does that fall on the kids? And the answer to that generally is no, unless the kids were co-borrowers, which usually isn't the case. You know, there's stories out there about if mom and dad pass away, sometimes the bank or whoever will call the beneficiary and say, hey, you know, would you like to make a payment anyway? And sometimes sort of out of, you know, kindness of their hearts or whatever, or confusion, they'll, you know, the kid will say, sure, I'll make a payment. Well, in that case, what you're doing now is the kid is actually affirming the debt and taking on responsibilities. Kind of a sneaky way. You hear stories about it every so often, but if you don't do that and you're not a co-borrower, then you're all set. You're in the clear.
Jack, we got about 45 seconds left. How can people reach out to you? How can they learn more?
Yeah, people can always email me, jack@longhornfin.com. Call me 877-226-4157 or facebook.com/longhornfin.
Jack, really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show. And as always, thanks for being my friend.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin.
Have a great day. Bye now.
And now, insurance-minded speeches from GEICO.
Hardship. My grandmother would go through it every month to pay her insurance bill. First, she would handwrite a paper check, in cursive. Then, using her own tongue, she would wet a stamp for an envelope. Today, however, we need not weary our hands and tongues. Today, we can pay our GEICO bill with the GEICO app. Away with hardship, in with bill pay on the GEICO app. Thank you.